Hey everyone, welcome to Horse Geeks Podcast. I'm Kirsten Nelson, a professional horse trainer, and with me is Deb Romero, professional Alexander, or certified, I should say, Alexander Technique instructor. So today's topic for the Horse Geeks Podcast is starting to look at Newton's laws of motion and why they're important to sort of understand as riders. We don't have to do the math. Everybody can just relax. But to understand, I know, thank God, to understand the concepts of the laws of motion, it's interesting to talk about. It's interesting to relate to how we ride. And at the end of the day, no matter what training theory we subscribe to, there are certain laws of reality. It's like gravity works 24/7. It's not our opinion. If you want to try to defy gravity, go for it. You know, there are ways. We fly planes, we do things, so there are ways. But gravity is always working. The laws of nature are always working. And what excites me about physics is, and again, not that I can do the math, I'm not great at it, but learning some of the laws of nature, because physics explains to us what already is. So before, you know, somebody gave the name gravity to this force of nature that we all know about, gravity still can't be fully explained in our modern science, in our current modern science. There's lots of theories, but nobody can quite explain gravity. And yet we know it to be true through our experience. We know it to be consistent. We know it to be a force of nature. So what Newton did with his three laws of motion was just describe how shit works when you're moving. It's like, this is just how it's going to work. So when we become familiar with it, we can use those laws as part of our understanding when we apply training theory, or I don't know, Deb, in your case, how it applies to conscious control of the body.
Yeah, that I like it when you said it, a law of nature. And it always amazes me when you bring up that word to humans, the response you get.
Which word? From
gravity.
Because we don't think about it much.
And if we do think about it, we think about it as a negative thing. Like, it's pulling me down.
Especially over 50. Especially women over 50. We're like, gravity is no longer our
gravity
friends.
Works. But yeah. If you think about it, animals don't think of, not that I know of, they don't think of gravity as being a negative pulling me down thing.
Well, we forget, though, there's gravity. The sun has the greatest gravitational force. That's what puts our Earth and the planets in orbit around the sun. So there's huge gravitational pull upward.
Right.
From the sun. And then the Earth has gravity, which is why the moon orbits the Earth in that gravitational field. So gravity, I think of all the time as up and down. Not just down and pulling, because the sun has gravity. So when we find that line of force, say between the sun and the earth, that's where we're working with gravity, which is where our balance is, as opposed to if we're out of alignment in a vertical plane with our bodies, then we are sort of working against gravity. We're fighting the force of gravity rather than finding the ease of working with gravity.
Yeah, because those words are really important, the ease of it, because when we have our center of mass where it should be, there's an ease there. It's not a big effort.
Exactly. And as bipeds, we're vertically shaped creatures, where with a horse is any quadruped is going to be kind of a horizontal shaped creature. Their axial skeleton is meant to be stable on a horizontal relationship to gravity. whereas bipeds, we have a vertical relationship to gravity. And therein lies our experience of inertia.
Yeah.
The rider on the horse. So Newton's first law of motion that we're going to talk about today is called the law of inertia. And in simple terms, it states a body at rest tends to stay at rest. A body in motion, especially on a consistent direction at a consistent speed, tends to stay in motion until the body is acted upon by an unbalanced force.
Right? Unbalanced force. Wow, that's powerful.
Right. So even gravity can be the unbalanced force. So when we throw a ball, the ball would travel forever if it wasn't for gravity. So we put it in motion at a certain speed on a certain direction, but gravity actually acts as a force. So the ball goes forward and downward at a certain point. So that's, you know, there are, I think in quantum physics now, there's like 12, they've broken all matter down to, or all things, not even matter, I should say, down to 12 known particles and 4 forces of nature. And gravity, wow, is one of the forces of nature. So the law of inertia, Newton specifically wrote that it is basically the short phrase is a body at rest tends to stay at rest, and a body in motion tends to stay in motion on the same path at the same speed until acted upon by an unbalanced force. And of course, you know, the first thing my head goes to is the unbalanced force of a horse suddenly stopping or right,
or up, down,
suddenly
sideways,
taking off, right? Or we as riders act as an unbalanced force all the time. So we can think of balance is where these forces, so we have 2 3-dimensional bodies. We have the rider body, which is primarily oriented to the vertical plane, and the horse is on the horizontal, but the human still has a horizontal and a lateral plane. So we have 3 planes to our 3-dimensional body, as does the horse. And when we shift left, right, forward, back just a little, we lose our balance a lot. If a horse shifts forward, back, left, and right, they don't fall over very easily, but we do, right? So when we're riding a horse, we can become the unstable or unbalanced force that interrupts the horse's motion, or the horse can become the unstable force that interrupts our motion or our balance. So if we think in these 3 planes, when we equalize the forces left to right, front to back, up to down, that equalization of force is the equilibrium or balance. So balance feels very smooth and easy because we've eliminated most of the unbalanced forces acting on the body. And we have to think of it in 3 dimensions. So that's kind of a mouthful. What did you, are you following me on that?
Yeah, what I see in riders is, what I found to be the most helpful is if the rider focuses on their own balance and stability.
Right.
First, in their thinking, unless, you know, they've got a major emergency on their hand, and correct me if I'm wrong or you see it differently, that I see a horse more able to come into a better balance sooner if the rider actually knows and uses their own balance to help.
Absolutely, because we are weight and mass. We generate, yes, force as soon as we sit on a horse. So if we're not managing our own equilibrium in 3 dimensions, in 3 planes, if we're not equalizing our body up, down, left, right, front, back, then our body weight and mass acts as an unbalanced force on the horse's movement. So the only way, and this is why you can buy a perfectly trained horse and all the training buttons fall off within 6 months, because it's too dynamic. If the rider isn't controlling their own balance, we constantly act as an unbalanced force on the horse's movement. So we can actually make a balanced horse unbalanced, or when we organize ourselves, that stabilization of forces already has a positive impact on the horse's ability to stabilize forces in those three directions, or three dimensions, I should say. So one thing I learned too, when I was just sort of like researching a little bit about this, was it was Galileo who actually coined or described the law of inertia. So Newton's law is like an evolution of what Galileo first presented. And Galileo's law of inertia states that if no net force acts on an object, the object maintains in the same state of motion.
So that brings up something in my thought about if, let me see if I can word this. If we have an unbalanced horse, whatever that means, high on the right, whatever you want to say, and we are riding that, about that state, what are we doing? Are we helping? Are we not helping? Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. And this is, I'm trying to relate it back to the law of inertia. How it works is actually, let's say the horse has a spinal rotation issue and the barrel rolls to one side.
Yeah.
Right? That happens. We are always hiking our saddle back to the middle, or we think we have one short leg and one long leg and we adjust our stirrups. And really, it's just a spinal function that got a little bit unstable. But the forces we feel is the barrel of the horse sort of rolling, like a boat tipping or a canoe tipping. It sort of has a rolling effect. So if we're trained to just keep our weight equal as what we're supposed to feel in the saddle or move with the horse, either one of those things means our body is most likely to tip with the roll of the horse's barrel. So if we don't resist the force, then say the barrel rolls low on the left, high on the right, or rolls towards the left. So then the horse's barrel is going to generate a force pushing outward on our right calf and a force pushing upward on our right seat bone. So if our weight and mass goes with that, it would be the same as if a wave hit our canoe and tipped it the same direction a little bit and we went with it. What would happen?
I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Because the movement is like waves of force, right? So when a horse loses balance, we get these asymmetrical waves that push us forward, back, left, or right. So when we try to just keep equal weight by how we feel to ride, or we're trained to just move with the horse, then it would be like being in a canoe with waves coming at you and you just allow it to happen. You just allow your body weight to go with the wave. Well, nobody does that because you would fall out, right? And you wouldn't think your canoe.
You don't want to do that.
You wouldn't think your canoe is being very disobedient too. Or that the waves are being naughty.
Naughty
waves. You would just realize that if the boat's capsizing to the left, you better get your body weight to the right. And yes, if it's really bad, you better get your whole ass over to the right, because that could be a lot of force, right? So water is kind of a better metaphor when we think about how we ride. If we think of the horse's motion like the forces of water, it's not so personal, right? And we can't
That's a good point.
We can't grab water and make it move, but we can channel and direct water, right?
Good. Yeah, I like that.
So when we talk about forces, there are forces of motion being generated by the horse. There are forces related to balance and imbalance from our bodies to their bodies, back to our bodies. So when a horse and rider get stuck in, say, a loop of fear, the horse is afraid and the energy level gets really high with fear. So the forces really intensify in magnitude and they can change direction very suddenly, right? So then the rider trying to cope with all that energy and all that force, we clamp and tighten, which makes us like, I don't know, kind of like a projectile. Yes. Not kind of like, makes us a projectile.
Yeah.
Right. Which actually on Horse Geeks podcast, we called it a podcast, even though we, you know, put it on YouTube because we didn't want anything visual added. We wanted this to be an auditory thing that people can listen to. But today I got to share the screen with one of my favorite memes ever that, that really is a stick in your head. It's a stick in your head, perfect picture of the law of inertia at work, right? So I'm going to pull up on the screen this meme. Let me see if you guys, oops, if you can see it. There we go. And what it says is, thank you for flying air amateur. And there's a horse saddled and bridled, looking quite relaxed with the reins on the ground and the rider doing a face plant all crumpled up in front of the horse. So we all know what happened. The horse stopped, the rider didn't, right? A body in motion tends to stay in motion. And when acted upon about, even acted upon by an unbalanced force, sometimes our body keeps going. Right. And then they wrote underneath, which just cracked me up. Exits are located at the front, rear, and sides. You may experience some turbulence during your descent. Please remain on the ground until your body comes to a full stop. Which is exactly not only what it feels like, but it's a really great example of the law of inertia. It's like the ground between the forces from the horse and the forces from the ground, our body gets kind of sandwiched in the middle, right?
Yeah, I always used to say, I don't mind being in the air. It's when I hit the ground I don't like.
It's not the falling off that hurts you. It's the hitting the ground part that really sucks.
It's the gravity that's working.
Right, right. So it just had to share that meme because it is, oops, hang on, let me stop that share. It is, it always cracks me up because that's what we experience when we're making transitions, when a horse spooks and suddenly changes direction with a lot of force. We feel that centrifugal force. We feel the law of inertia. It's not something that is foreign to us as riders. We feel it every ride. And the other interesting thing about the law of inertia, where I use it all the time with riding, is people get really frustrated when horses do not maintain gait. And what I saw was a natural way for a horse to rebalance. If they lose balance, walk, trot, or canter, and you watch them in a field, the first thing they do is a downward transition to regain stability, right? So I go, why fight it? Because if I can make a horse maintain a gait, I might also be maintaining dysfunction, right?
It's that holding pattern kind of thing, yeah.
Exactly. Because if they don't have the coordination to maintain balance in any specific gait, then making them maintain it, I just went, why do that? I'm just repeating dysfunctional use instead of changing habits. And then I realized the law of inertia I use all the time for horses that don't want to go forward or are hard to stop. So I go, if I give a leg aid or use the whip and I ask a horse to go forward and they put in this minimal little lethargic effort, if I allow them to stop or make a downward transition, and then I repeat the aid, that repetition of walk, halt, or walk, trot, canter, trot, walk, whatever transitions we're doing, that takes more energy. It's a lot more energy. So the property of inertia tells us that every material body has a property by virtue, which means just by being a body, in which it resists a change in its current state. So it takes more energy. So this is the same reason we get better fuel efficiency when we drive on the highway than we do in the city.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what kind of car you have. The stopping and starting, what we have to do in the city when we drive, takes a lot more fuel. It's less fuel efficient, right? That's the law of inertia at work. It takes more energy to change state than it does when we get on the highway and we hit the cruise control and we stay at 70, then we're not really speeding up or slowing down a lot. We're making minute adjustments, which means we get better gas mileage because that's the body in motion tends to stay in motion. It's a more fuel efficient way of going. So the same thing with the rhythm of a horse, when they sort of find that balance between acceleration and braking or deceleration, same thing, we can find a very efficient rhythm, which equalizes the forces of go and woe, so that the horse spends less metabolic energy maintaining a rhythm than they do making transitions. So I go, I can work with that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time, a little bit of patience. When a horse that won't go forward, I have to repeat the leg aid or use the whip. I have to wait for the downward transition. That's the key. Let him spend the energy breaking gait. Then I can wait one step or 20 steps, reapply the aid, and they have to spend more energy to get back to the gait I asked for. And every single horse finds forward that way as forward becomes easier and more comfortable. So they're going to work on their balance during those transitions, find more efficiency, and then find that efficient rhythm is more energy efficient to just maintain rather than stopping and starting. So it works all the time. I go, because it's a law of nature. So I know the horse is going to feel it. It's just a matter of time and repetition. So instead of being crazy or making my horse crazy when they break gait, I go, I can work with the law of inertia as a training tool.
Yeah, I think you can even compare that with the Alexander technique. We use this, are using inertia.
In what way?
To find that easy place you were talking about. It's kind of like, we say this all the time with the horses, is when we give an aid in a direction, the response is usually, no, not that, no, not that. So you're always kind of going and narrowing it down to what is where inertia is at its best in movement. And I've seen it when I lunge my horses, each one of them, if I give them the amount of time of those downward transitions, they will eventually find the easy trot.
Yes.
Because, and I remember that going through Alexander School, if you compare a first year student, say to a third year student, you know, your first year, you're exhausted all the time because of all these changes that you're asking of your body. And it can be extremely suck the energy right out of you. But once you become more efficient, say, you know, a third year or a master teacher that's been teaching for 20 years, they're much more efficient.
Absolutely. It's what we see in all great athletes, that ease of motion, that equilibrium. Just as easy, to go forward as to stop, for example. So, I mean, can you imagine a soccer player or a football player that was like a horse that either wouldn't stop? Like they get going and they can't stop.
Just get stuck.
Can't stop. Right. But with horses, it's like we leverage back if they can't stop. Again, in training, I can work with the law of inertia. So what calms a horse down that doesn't control its forward motion? So once it gets going, it keeps speeding up and speeding up, sort of using momentum as a stabilizer. Those horses are so easy to work with because I do nothing. I just stand in the middle of the lunge line or the middle of the round pen and I just wait.
Wait.
Right?
Yeah.
Wait. I go, it feels like hours and you look at your watch and it's maybe 10 minutes. Right. I go, they don't typically run away for hours. But as soon as I become this unbalanced force trying to shut them down, it is just like a rider, like that little meme of the rider flying off the horse when the horse suddenly stopped. When we throw a brake in front of the horse that's trying to run away, it's like it's like slamming into a tree kind of force, right? Which doesn't feel good to anybody. So I just let the law of inertia work for me. I go, you want to run away? As long as they're sound enough, safe enough to do so, I go, knock yourself out. And they relax. They little by little, just like a horse learning to go forward, little by little, they decide, oh, maybe I want to slow down. And they figure out how. And they've spent all this maybe pent up energy or fear energy. And once that dissipates, they start to explore, how do I slow myself down? Right? Which we can't really, I don't want to say, we can't make a horse do it in the best balance.
In the best balance.
In the best balance.
Yeah, that's the important part.
And even internally, so a horse lifts its back through spinal flexion, longitudinal spinal flexion, which means the spine is sort of, the direction of force is upward for the whole spine. The way they do that is internally balancing the use of their back muscles to resist forward forces as well as manage forward forces. So half of the job of the back muscles is to resist the forward thrusting force of the hind legs. So the hind legs generate forward force, and when it just keeps generating it, if the back muscles aren't sort of tapping on the brakes, so to speak, and managing that, resisting in a direct opposition, a resistance to that forward force, then they literally would fall forward and do a somersault.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with people. Those back muscles, if you see little kids run, mm-hmm. they always kind of look like they're falling forward, falling forward, falling forward.
And then they do.
And then it's those back muscles that are resisting the fall forward. So you can compare it. People as adults, we need help, some of us in that department of what we're using those back muscles for. Because you've seen people with arched backs, just like horses.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the misuse of right. those back muscles.
Right. No, and the other part of the horse's back muscles, half of them are for braking and the other half is for converting a portion of the forward force into vertical force. So the back muscles literally pull the spine upward when they balance and equalize those directions of force. So the hind legs generate forward force. The back muscles' job partially is to resist the forward force to stabilize the body in motion and then convert a portion of the forward force into vertical force. That's what alleviates the weight to the front legs. That's what lifts the back. That's what actually frees up all four limbs to have a greater range of motion. because the back is really stabilizing the body. So it's interesting that even internally, when we balance, we're playing with acceleration, which is like just how quickly or how slowly we add energy in our body, living body. We just say we want more energy, there it is. We want less energy, we use less. So that's acceleration. And then braking is, say, if you're not on a horse, like you're describing, there's a resistance to gravity and a resistance to our own legs moving us, or the acceleration we generate in our own body. We also have to resist. Otherwise, we fall over, or we come out of alignment with gravity, which means we have to overuse our muscles, maybe create small repetitive damage to our joints, our tendons, our ligaments. There's all kinds of side effects.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, the overuse of muscular efforting. I think I can attest, I see it in humans, and I'm sure you see it in horses.
Oh, I think just like you probably see some people, just like some horses, don't really want to go forward. And other people, just like horses, have a hard time controlling their forward motion. We call them type A and type B. Right. So the type A people tend to move very quickly and maybe aren't using their back muscles in a way to stabilize. So maybe they have tight back muscles from sort of pushing more than they are balancing or controlling. And then people who don't want to go forward, maybe they're sort of propped backwards and there's just no power for forward.
Right.
Or there's no energy for forward because they have pain or discomfort or a lack of general energy and fitness. So that's the same for horses. Mm-hmm. Right? And as riders, when we ride, our dynamic aid, when we want a horse to slow down, is actually using our back muscles that way and our core to resist the current force of acceleration. So just like in a car, when we resist acceleration, that's the beginning of sort of changing the direction of force or the constant speed of the force of the object, right? So if we want our car to slow down, we kind of push on the brakes, which is a resistant force to the current acceleration. We can do that in a school zone and we can do it on a highway. It's the same mechanism. So the horse's braking mechanism is half of the back muscles and same for the human. So when we want a horse to slow down or stop, we tighten or tone our back and core muscles and literally create a resistant force to the horse's hindquarter pushing forward. And that's our braking mechanism. Then we can use the reins to back it up. We can turn the horse to back it up. We can do all kinds of other things. But that sort of toning of our back and increasing muscular energy is we create a vertical force through our body that then the horse has to either push more, push harder, mm-hmm. or the path of least resistance might be to slow down.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's like a lot of people think of slowing a horse down or controlling forward motion with a backwards force. But I go, if you think of the law of inertia, that's like a huge clash of energy to introduce a force in a directly opposing direction, right? True braking is resisting the force within the same direction. When we
Say that again.
True braking, which is what we do with our back muscles and the horse does. And it's B-R-A-K-E, just like in a car.
Okay.
Right? So when we hit the brakes in a car, we're not in reverse.
Right.
Right? Can you imagine if you threw your car in reverse to slow down at a signal? It's ridiculous, right? Because what would that do to our body? We would feel the law of inertia very clearly, right? If we went from forward to reverse. So we don't do that. What we do is we're going forward, and braking on a horse is the same as braking in a car. We resist the current amount of acceleration. That could be 2 miles an hour or 200 miles an hour, but there's a current acceleration, a current force of acceleration, right? So the way riders use their bodies is when we pull back, when we shorten our arms towards our torso on the reins of any length, with or without a bit, it doesn't matter if you have a bit or don't, when we pull backwards on the reins, that's like throwing reverse at the horse. That's like if the horse was the car in motion, when we pull back on the reins, we just shifted into reverse. We didn't brake. That's why horses panic so much. Oh. Right? When you pull back on the reins, some of them will go faster. Have an OTTB.
Yeah.
They all go faster when you pull back on the bit. Right? But the same thing, if we lean our torso backwards, we also create an opposing direction of force, directly opposing forward. So we're creating a backwards force. Same thing if we jam our feet in the stirrups with our heels down and our legs pushed forward. So the reins, the seat, and the leg can all equally generate an opposing force to forward. So some horses that don't want to go forward are because they're like, well, you always have me in reverse. How am I supposed to go forward? You're always asking for a reverse.
Oh, I know what it's like. It's like being behind somebody that has their foot on the brake and the gas at the same time.
Yeah. Yes. Or learning to drive the stick shift, right? Yes. So when we give aids to a horse, and this is the importance of understanding, like the law of inertia, the energy it takes to change states. And that's even if you're still creating resistance in the same direction. When we create resistance in a directly opposing direction, like I said, some horses just don't want to go forward because they're going to meet an opposing force. Mm-hmm. And other horses, when they feel the opposing force, they go faster and they panic because they feel restricted. So I find it's not the amount of pressure you have on the reins. It's not whether you have a bit or don't have a bit or what kind of reins you use or what kind of bit you use. Horses object to a backwards force on their head, just like we would. It just does not feel good when somebody rips us backwards by our hair. Doesn't feel good. Not going to like it. Right? Some of us will respond by not trying to go forward again. And then there's the redheaded women, chestnut mares, that go, I'm going to double down on going forward.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the equivalent. Like sometimes when we say the horse hates the bit, they have a busy mouth, we're not even considering. Are we asking them to slow down, but still within forward motion? Just like the brakes in our car. Are we creating resistance through our back, our core, and our reins without changing the direction of force to oppose forward? And that's a huge deal from the horse's perspective, right? So when they act out, I find 9 times out of 10, that's where the problem is. We don't realize that we're generating backwards forces while the horse is going forward. And if we look at these physical laws of nature, we sort of go, oh, I guess that's not going to work.
So for some reason, I'm getting this picture of a cutting horse in my head.
And what do you see with a cutting horse?
That's a good question. I see all those forces at work.
Oh, yeah.
Big time. It's like it's magnified to me.
Absolutely. Any athletic endeavor, whether it's an equine athlete or a human athlete, it's like that agility to change direction that fast, to be able to go forward with control and backwards just as fast, right? If you watch the riders on cutting horses, they're not moving with their horse. They're resisting those forces in order to remain upright. And the better they get at that, the more neutral they become. So they're not they're not disrupting those really
because that's a law of inertia right there. You disrupt that and it goes back to your meme that you showed.
Right.
That picture came and I'm thinking, yeah, those guys are so with it. You know,
because there are exits on either side as well as the front.
Yeah.
And it's a huge skill for a rider. But I had an opportunity to spend a tiny bit of time with Leon Harrell, who is he's a well-known cutting competitor and trainer. Amazing. And, you know, his horses, just looking at them in the field, were the most beautifully developed horses. All of them round and muscly and athletic, and their backs beautifully developed, the hindquarters beautifully developed. And so we could easily say, oh, he has a certain line of quarter horses he likes. That's what they all look like. No, not all quarter horses look like that, even well-bred ones, if they're moving poorly and in dysfunction. So the only way to really get a horse that athletic is through equalizing the forces in all directions. And I really admire that about great cutting riders, because they couldn't do what they do. And it's innate for these horses. You can breed for sort of what they call cowiness, which is really also a tendency towards aggression.
It is.
In horses, right? It's a tendency towards aggression. So you got to be careful that you have a good relationship with that horse, because you're encouraging sort of this chasing towards movement of the horse. But yeah, I'm glad that came to your mind, because you can't get that agility without, first of all, being able to equalize forward, back, left, right, up and down. And then secondly, having a tremendous amount of physical strength. For that, and the strength isn't for the speed all the time. Strength can be in resisting speed. That's what gives you fast turns.
That's what just keeps coming to my mind, because they're just to watch it. It's so orchestrated.
Well, and humans kind of finally figured that out with what we call Pilates, right? Okay. So at least in Pilates, there's an exercise called the plank, which is one of the hardest freaking exercises, right? Because you basically hold a push-up for as many minutes as you can. And that resistant use of the muscle is exhausting and toning and strengthening. That resistant use of the muscle is every bit as powerful as using muscle to generate force or acceleration. And that's what we use the most as riders, is resistant control of our muscle. So when you ride well, nobody can see you move. It looks effortless, and you're just dripping in sweat. I go, you're using a ton of muscle energy. It's just that nobody can see you because you're resisting the forces of motion in the horse.
I think that is key for riders to integrate, resisting the forces.
Yes. That is true braking that helps lift the horse's back. Anything other than that, you'll get the horse stopped, but you won't lift the back. You won't be able to flex the spine, because the back muscles of the horse have to equalize, and it's an ever-changing, evolving, unique balance between the braking and the acceleration the braking and the pushing use of the back muscles that flexes the spine. And it's unique to each horse and it changes throughout development. So it's not something you can give an aid for. It's like you have to really understand the forces of motion.
Yeah. It's not a place. It's not a position, I guess is a better word.
Because yeah, it's not a position and it's not what we think of as give a leg aid and a half halt and check them on the bit. It's like, well, that that might work, but that's not even considering force management.
Right.
Right. So a horse as like, if we think of a horse as a body of water, we can still work with a stormy ocean, 6 and 8 foot waves, currents in rivers, floods and currents, pools of water, lakes, streams, like all of those are just describing a force of nature that we call water, but water has motion, right? Or I guess it could be stagnant, could be still. But if we think of the horse's motion, it gets less personal, like the horse is acting against us. I go, a horse that's struggling with their balance is going to feel like rough conditions on the ocean. When we jump big jumps, it literally feels like a wave.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It's a good way. Yeah.
And racing is sort of like this fast stream of energy. Mm-hmm. Right. So when we play with, when we think in terms of forces of motion, we can channel the horse's motion towards a state of equalizing the directions and equilibrium overall. That's what balance is. So we kind of get out of having to do certain exercises and give certain aids. And is this aid right? Did I teach this horse an aid as a cue? Blah, blah, blah. It's much more dynamic than that.
Yes.
It's force management. So anything you want to wrap it up with, Deb?
Oh, that was great.
It's so, like, it just gets me excited to think about, like, laws of nature, which are described through the science of physics.
Yeah.
They already exist. We just describe them. So we learn how to work with them instead of against them or being caught off guard.
So yeah, I think that's the important part, that riding, changing our thinking on, we're dealing with forces. This is not a personal thing.
Yes. Forces of motion feel, it's a bit less personal when we fall off our bike or we fall out of the boat, right? Or we crash on the water skis. It's like, we don't blame the inanimate object and we don't blame the water. We just are taking it on to have fun. And so when we can think of horses are just, they are a tremendous force of nature. Mm-hmm. That's why we use the term horsepower.
Good one.
Right. Even for rockets, when they launch rockets, they measure horsepower on rockets. I'm like, I don't think I can ride that direction, but
I don't wanna.
At least not that high, right? So just to recap, Newton's first law of motion is called the law of inertia. And the law states a body at rest tends to stay at rest. And a body in motion tends to stay in motion with a constant speed and constant direction until acted upon by an unbalanced force. Inertia as a principle tells us that every material body has this property that is resistant to changing the current state because it takes more energy, right? And then Galileo, who coined the law of inertia, if no net force acts on an object, the object maintains in the same state of motion. So that comes full circle back to why we have to learn to stabilize our bodies first so that the horse can maintain balance in motion. Ultimately, yes. That's a balanced rider on a balanced horse is doing more work on self-control than they are directing the horse.
Yeah, that's important because I think we sometimes get very controlling and dewy.
Dewy, handsy. Dewy. We have to do something or we're not.
I got to do something in that corner.
Right. No, and sort of a type A person. It was like, it really gave me something to do with all that type A energy when I turned my focus to the forces I was feeling. Were they equalized? Where were they going? Were they channeling and coalescing into a direction of forward and upward? Or were they dissipating in like all directions, like pickup sticks? Right. Yeah. And so tuning into the forces, I go, we can't miss them. As soon as you sit on a horse, you feel the forces of motion. That's why we get scared or we fall off because of the forces of motion, right? So it's not anything that anybody, no rider could miss the forces of motion. And to think of them as having direction or magnitude.
Magnitude, yeah.
Is how we learn to manage forces of motion in ourselves and in the horse.
Yes.
So thank you guys for joining us for this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Please like, subscribe if you want to follow on YouTube. Comments are always welcome. And we hope you will join us again for the next Horse Geeks podcast. Thank you.
Be kind.